Hello and welcome to BBS Talk Radio, the number one worldwide internet talk radio network. And we are debuting our new show today, For a Beautiful You. And let me tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Lady Di, and I am the National Director with the Miss and Mrs. U.S. Beauties National Pageant. And we're going to have some very interesting guests on the show this summer. And we're looking forward to meeting and having all kind of people up here on air to answer questions from both myself and the viewers. And for us today, we have a wonderful special guest on our show. The beautiful and charismatic Nashville recording star, Gina James.
Well, hello, everybody. And hi, Diane. How are you, Miss Di?
I'm doing fine, Gina. I do want the listeners to know that Gina and I have become very close friends the last few months. And it's a very interesting story on how we met. And Gina, you probably want to tell the listeners a little bit about the background of how we met.
It's actually kind of comical. First of all, I lost my manager, my producer, and my fiance, Porter Wagner, the ambassador to the Grand Ole Opry, and had won many, many Grammys. He and Dolly Parton as duos, and he as himself, and he had the longest running television show in syndication, which was the Porter Wagner Show. And that was in the end of September, and I was in mourning and had taken time off from all of the touring and everything else, and just was kind of lost and trying to heal. And all of a sudden, I was going through the messing with the computer, and this pageant thing come on. And I thought, pageants, wow. That brings back great memories. Because back in my early childhood on up, my father, he wasn't a pageant mom. I had a pageant daddy. And so Daddy would, we were very modest as far as money went. We were poor, let's put it that way. And Daddy was, it was taking everything he could have, he made to, you know, put me in all these pageants. And I tried so hard every time, and he was so wonderful. And I lost Daddy Christmas 05 in my arms, and Porter caught me then. So I had just lost, these were the two most important men of my life within that small amount of time. And this one reminded me of my dad. So, of course, I thought, pageants. I would love to do a pageant. Because this one, there's no age limit on it, and you could be married or single. Okay, and 1988.
Which you were Miss Florida.
In 1988.
Yes.
I was Miss Florida for the U.S. pageants, for the Miss USA pageants. Didn't do very well. I got the state, but I didn't do very well on nationals, put it that way. Anyway, I was thrilled to just win Miss Florida. And by being in the pageant, there was a judge who was a talent scout for an indie label, an independent label. And I was a singer, a country singer. And I had been professionally since I was 14. So anyway, to make a long story short, I called this number, and I think I want to be in a pageant again to feel good about myself. And this beautiful voice answers the telephone, and it was Lady Di, and she and I began to talk. And by that one phone call, I got the sweetest friend. Di and I have become very good friends, And I said, this is going to be hard for me. I've done many, many interviews, but this is my friend now, you know, too. So anyway, as we talk, she's like, you don't want to be in the pageant. And you take it from there, Di. How's that?
Yeah, you know,
I'll throw it back at you.
Yeah, and you know something? We found out we had a lot in common. You know, not only pageantry, but, you know, friendship, you know, people that we know. I mean, it's just amazing how we just started talking about so many things, and we related to each other real well. Yeah. I mean, our phone calls are like 3 hours long. I mean, so here's the motto of this story, okay? Anybody who's listening who has special friendships, you know, friendships are like a marriage. You really have to work hard at it. And it seemed to fall into place with Gina and myself. And for that, I am so grateful to have found a beautiful soul and spirit that I found in Gina. But you know what, Gina, we're going to talk about the many things that you have upcoming, starting with an autobiography that you're writing.
We are doing an autobiography, and it's about the life I shared with Porter Wagoner.
Now, many of the listeners may be young. They may not know who Porter Wagoner is. I'm sure
right.
a lot of people know who Porter Wagoner is.
Right.
But let's give the audience a little synopsis of who Porter Wagoner really was.
Okay. Porter had his first hit was in 1955. Okay, and 1965, it just ran on and on. He had A Satisfied Mind, a song called A Satisfied Mind, and he was just a young boy. And the lyric line, and this is what stands out to me to be his life, because the lyric line in it that was so profound to me was, your money can't buy back your youth when you're old, or a love that's grown cold. And that was something that he was singing as a young man about how, you know, you think you want to be wealthy, but all the wealth can't buy the most beautiful things in life. And they can't. And if your pockets are filled with gold, you can't buy back somebody that doesn't love you anymore. And you can't buy back, you know, being 20 again. And Porter was very generous, but he was known as the ambassador to the Grand Ole Opry. And the Grand Ole Opry will miss him dearly, and are missing him dearly. Marty Stewart is doing a heck of a job taking up the helms and trying to do everything he can to make up for Porter's loss, because he's such a huge fan of Porter's and has been all his life. And he actually produced Porter's last hit song. He had just got a new record deal and had just got a new song that was released that was climbing the charts, and had just played the David Letterman show and Caesar's Palace. And while all this was happening, we didn't know he was eat up with cancer. He checks into a hospital, and they tell us he has cancer. 12 days later, he had passed. But he was amazed at how the youth, the young people, he was actually opening at this point in his life for a rock and roll group. And he was just shocked that these kids were just, you know, going crazy over his music. And I think Johnny Cash's his movie had a lot to do with that. Because Johnny Cash, the movie, touched so many young people, from children, little children can tell you the lyrics of Johnny's songs now, you know, and they couldn't have done that before the movie. And Porter was just astounded that these young people, and he was just so happy the happiest I had seen him in many, many years. And then, you know, the boom happened, and I lost him. But Porter had made the careers of so many, and was a member of the Hall of Fame, the Country Music Hall of Fame. He celebrated a 50-year being a member of the Grand Ole Opry for 50 years, the only person in history. He was known for his nudie suits, the shiny, studded nudie suits with rhinestones all over them. He stood 6'3". He was known as the tall, thin man from Missouri because he was from West Plains, Missouri. And he was just very, very giving, but he didn't want nobody dictating when he was to give. He was really funny. Like at birthdays or Christmas or whatever, he said, if I want to give a gift, I want to do it whenever I want to do it. So every day was Christmas for me. And, I mean, it was so hard then, you know, what do you buy him? A man who has everything in the world. You know, he's got a mansion and he drives the finest of cars, you know, from the Rolls to the Lexus and the Mercedes. I mean, what do you buy him? So I would have to be very thoughtful and come up with creative things because, you know, money things didn't mean nothing to him. He had all that. So that was the hardest part for me, was always buying for Porter. Always the hardest. And the easiest for him, because he was great. I mean, he kept up on. He bought me my first Coco Chanel bag, my first Louis Vuitton bag, Versace, everything. I had no idea who these people's names even were before I met Porter, but I was a very, very young girl when I met Porter. And Porter then asked me, what happened was I was on stage, I was singing, I had finally made the move into Nashville. I was on stage singing at the Palace, which was the new, when they built the new Grand Ole Opry, it kind of took the place of Tootsie's from the Ryman, when the old, at the club that was across the street from the old Grand Ole Opry, the Ryman House. And so the celebrities would come in and have dinner after the show, or have a drink, or whatever they wanted. Anyway, I was singing on stage, everybody that works at the Palace, another North Carolina boy, Randy Travis, was working at the Palace when he got his break. Many, many of them came from the Palace. But anyway, this kid comes up to me after I finished singing my four songs, because everybody there sang, and we had to do a job, too. So mine was hostess. But anyway, I finished my four songs, and I came off the stage, and as I was exiting the stage, this young man who bussed tables and sang came up to me, and he said, "Hey, man, you ain't gonna believe this, Porter Wagner's in the back, and he wants to talk to you." And I said, "About what?" And he's like, "It's Porter Wagner who wants to talk to you." And I'm like, looking in the back, and it's dark, long room, you know, and the man I'm seeing don't look like no Porter Wagner that I know. So I'm thinking, okay, here's another, you know, Nashville story. You know, everybody knows somebody, or they're going to do something or whatever kind of deal. Anyhow, we end up getting, the closer I got, the more I began to wonder, because he had flannel shirt, a pair of Wrangler jeans, and a Bass Pro Shops cap on his head.
That took you a little aback, you know, saying,
I'm thinking, that's not the Stars and Spangles, that I'm used to seeing him in, the nudie suits. Anyway, I thought, I'll know when he opens his mouth, because I've loved Porter since I was a young, young girl. So I walked back to the table, and he gave this young man, rolled up, $100 bill, a tip, for bringing him, or for delivering his message and bringing me to the table. And he asked me to sit down, and I said, I can't sit down. First of all, let me say this. He stood up and he said, hi, I'm Porter Wagner. Bam, I knew that was Porter Wagner. I knew that voice. And I had known it my whole life. I don't remember the first time I heard it. My dad was a fan of the Porter Wagner show, and so we watched it every week. And, you know, of course, Daddy would clean off the coffee table and give me a hairbrush. And that's where I would stand and perform and sing note for note, word for word, every one of Porter's songs. And years later, and Daddy and Porter became great, great friends. Years later, Dad showed him a whole movie of me actually watching the show and seeing that that was my boyfriend and all this, you know, crazy little kid stuff that tickled Porter to death. But anyway, I moved into the mansion not long after meeting him. I moved there. I had $32 to my name after I paid to have the apartment and everything turned on, and didn't realize that you have to have hot water, gas to have your hot water turned on. So Gina was boiling hot water and pouring it into the tub because I couldn't afford to have it turned on. I knew which nights were tacos were 29 cents night and whatnot because I was just, you know, barely making ends meet. But thank God I only lived there. Well, I moved in October. By the middle of November, Porter had asked me to become a part of the show at the Grand Ole Opry. And
Not only are you a singer, but you're a songwriter.
Yeah.
And so
I do a little bit of that.
Yeah, and I, you know, she's really humble, but I've heard some of her music, and I have to tell you that she is a very talented songwriter.
I think.
And has written some wonderful music.
Lately, everything's been depressive music. But
well,
I'll get back in the groove.
Yeah, you need some, you know, feel like a woman kind of music. But
yeah,
you know what?
Yeah.
It's only because of the loss that Gina suffered, you know, losing Porter and the people, her loved ones in her life, you know, which caused her to bring some sadness to her music. But you know what? You feel the music at the time. That's how you write it. You know?
That's when you write. You can't write if I say I'm going to go sit down and write a song. You can't write.
Right.
You just sit there with a blank pencil or a blank piece of paper and a pencil. But you know, in your darkest moments, you can't quit writing. Or at your highest moments of love, that's when you write your best songs. When you're at your peaks of height, of good things in your life, or just the opposite, like mine was dark.
Well, you know what, you had people in your life that were inspirations to you, such as Porter was, but you also had your father.
My father was the greatest man.
Let me ask you something, Gina. How do you feel your relationship with your father has influenced your music, inspirational life, and your career in the whole?
Well, first of all, Dad never pushed me to sing or to do pageants. It was me pushing big time. Dad did not want me playing in a bar. But Daddy and I had such a relationship that my daddy was my biggest fan, and I was my daddy's biggest fan. My dad stood 6'4". He had broad shoulders, and he was a John Wayne type of guy. But he had the most tender heart and would cry at the he could be watching, flipping through channels. And you know, after Dad passed, I was going through some of his personal effects, and I found where he had for years and years and years, he had raised these three children from Ethiopia. And help put them through then was help, when he passed, was helping put them through college. But they were kids when he first started. But, you know, you'll pass through the channels and you'll see these children that are hungry and they, you know, for a cup of coffee a day or whatever it will say. That's the kind of, Daddy was real sentimental. And so he influenced me by this. I've always said, if there's any good in me, Daddy put it there.
And, you know, father and daughter relationships are really special.
Very special, because if you don't have a good relationship with your father, I know with my daughter.
You're going to be opening for Toby Keith pretty soon on the tour.
Tell us a little bit
about that.
Well, we've got several tour dates coming up. They're going to be for 3 weeks the first time out. We're going out for 3 weeks. Then we've got 3 days off. We'll go back out for 2 weeks. Then we're going to, ironically, have 3 days off. Isn't that weird? And then after that, we will have a little hiatus with him. And I will then be working with Travis Tritt and Marty Stewart. And when I'm working with Marty and Travis, I'll be gone for 2 weeks. Then I'll be back in for 2 weeks. Then I'll go back out with Tracy Lawrence. And with Tracy will be Clay Walker. And so it'll be the two of them. And these are all people that I've worked with many times before, so I can't wait to get back with them. And I thank God above for letting it work out that way, that it happened to be, you know, people that I had worked with before, that this is my first time since Porter's passed that I've toured. So I thank God that, you know, he's letting it be friends of mine that I'm working with instead of new people, you know, having to get to know.
And it's very exciting because not only are you going to be touring with Toby Keith, your autobiography, you're going to be making an album as well.
We're in the middle of that right now. Right now as we speak. We've got 14 songs, and we're going to cut them down, and we're going to pick the best out of those. And I'm really excited about, there's a on there that are just unreal, and so I'm really excited about. I think the audience is going to like what we've got to offer. I hope so. Anyway, it's some new and different for me, because I got the name James from being an outlaw. I wouldn't conform to country music and the business end of it and whatnot. I won't sing a song unless I can feel the song, kind of thing. And the producers back then with the indie label were wanting me to sing whatever they wanted me to sing. And I couldn't do that. You know, if I can't feel it, how am I going to make you feel it? You know? So.
What advice would you give aspiring singers?
First of all, I would say whatever whether they're country, whether they're hip hop, wherever their capital is, like mine just happens to be Nashville. Okay, opportunity is not going to come looking for you. You've got to go to it. It's hard. It's so hard to leave your family and your friends, and for me to be broke and scared to death and know no one in this big city and me just a, you know, a country bumpkin, it was very difficult, but it was so worth it, because I've traveled the world. I've been able to do all these things because I took that chance. They've got to get out there and take that chance. But I would also stress that please do not give your money to anybody. There are so many piranhas that are in this business that say they're producers, and for such and such amount of money, they'll be glad to make you a record that will chart and this, that, and the other thing. First of all, you're not going to do any good on an independent label except one thing, and that's get yourself some good experience before you get in there with a major label. Experience as far as studio experience is what I mean. And, but if they're authentic, if they're for real, if they're on the up and up, they're not going to ask for money from you. No. It's going to be just the opposite. You know, they'll pay you. You don't pay them. So, just be cautious. Go to where your music is, but be very cautious and give it everything you have, and don't stop when one or two or three or four say no. You keep knocking on them doors. You keep on until you may get 500 no's, but that one yes was so worth 500 no's. So that's what I would tell them.
Well, you know, our motto is a positive person is a success. So what is your definition of success?
Wow. You got me there. That's going to be a tough one for me. My definition for success would be, first of all, success would not necessarily equal money. Success wouldn't equal power. Success is something I believe that you would find within yourself. And by being successful at what you love, if you're doing something you love, then you are a success. Whether you make it or not, you're a success if you're doing something that you love. If you're singing and you're singing in a club and you never get any further than that, but you're making a living at it, you're doing something you love, you've already made it. You are a success if you're happy within yourself and doing something that you love.
Well, positive self-esteem is a great force for people to have, because I think that when you feel good about yourself, you're able to then succeed in your everyday life. It's when you don't feel good about yourself. And, you know, most people lose the feeling of their self-esteem when something tragic has happened, or when people constantly put them down and say mean things. So, because mean things is really, I mean, words are cut deep. And I think that when a self-esteem is damaged, it's really hard to bring that person back to where they should be. And that's when they need to center themselves around loving people. And I think that has happened in your life. I mean, you've had some sadness, but you also have people around you who are encouraging you and are aspiring you to do the very best you can be.
I would say that had it not been for my friends like you, friends like the woman who's writing my autobiography of Porter and I, her name's Jereen. Wow, what a writer. She's so fantastic. And has become such a great friend. Her name's Jereen Mason. She has just, you know, been so much, meant so much to me. And I have a friend in San Diego. Kat is she's another rock it's Catherine Brown, but I call her Kat. Anyway, she was there for me right when all of it was happening. When I was losing him, every moment there was a phone call, it seemed like, to her. And I thank you, Kat, if you're listening, so much. I thank you for being that rock and for taking those 4 o'clock phone calls and for being there for me. Marty Stewart, who produced Porter's last album and co-produced 2 of the songs on here with Porter on my new album with Porter, and then produced the rest. I thank you. Connie Smith, I thank you, his wife, his beautiful wife. Billy Currington. There's so many. I know I'm leaving many, many out, but there's so many that have been there in the industry. And Di, you have helped me so much to heal, because you've brought a whole, the pageantry brought back the sweet memories of Daddy, and I'm just, you know, that one phone call that I made to you changed my life and brought on board a best friend too, and I wouldn't trade you for $1 million. I mean, our good friends, if we don't have friends, we don't have anything. And in my life, I've had so many users and hanger-ons for what they could get. And it's nice, so nice, you know, to have them that aren't users, that are your true friends. And they love you even though you can be a butt sometimes and not be just perfect. And other times you're fine and whatnot, but yeah, it's I'm just grateful for my friends. So
and
grateful.
That is the beauty of having good friends.
And they're few and far between in your lifetime.
Well, you have many acquaintances, but you don't have. I mean, you have many acquaintances, but having those good friends is very important. These friendships, like I said, is like a marriage. You have to work hard at it. Let's go back to Miss Florida that you won. I mean, you're a winner, no matter if you win a regional, state, or national pageant. There's no such thing as a loser. There's no such thing, you know, as that in our book. I mean, everybody is a winner just for competing. It's very difficult to compete in a pageant system. Pageants are very underrated due to the negative press over the past couple of decades.
Yeah.
And I really feel, and I've seen women really grow as individuals after they've won their competition. You know, self-esteem and the way they feel about themselves.
That's what I was getting ready to say. Yes, you get so much self-esteem. I mean, my mother was a runner-up in the Miss North Carolina pageant, and that was in 1959. I believe. I know with me, as far as confidence goes, as far as boys, I didn't have boyfriends, you know, in school. My boyfriend was a piece of wood that was shaped into a guitar with strings on it, you know? So you don't gain a lot of confidence with a guitar in your bedroom, you know, after you've done your homework.
Well, the social skills at 14 is very important.
Yeah.
But you did have some positive things come out of that.
Yeah, that Sears and Roebuck catalog guitar was something else, I'll tell you. I begged for it, and I knew Dad couldn't afford it. And then I said, no, I changed my mind. I don't want that thing. I'll never learn how to play it. You know what I want? And I can't even remember. I named something real cheap because it dawned on me, Daddy can't afford this. You know? And I thought, I'm asking him for something he can't afford. I'm not going to do it. So I said, no, I don't want that. I'll never learn how to play. I'll just sing. I don't want to be a player anyway. I'll sing. And he said, are you sure? And I said, I'm sure. So by him saying, are you sure? I was sure that I wasn't getting it. You know, that I would get whatever other thing that I had asked for, which was much less expensive. I don't know, it may have been an outfit or something. You know, it was never nothing big. That was the biggest gift I'd ever gotten, ever. And I think it was $29. And it still had the price on the box. And I opened that Christmas present, and I about knocked my daddy over. And poor daddy had to listen to me learn to play. And there's nothing worse than listening to somebody learn to play by ear. It's horrible. I mean, the sounds that you can make that thing go, it's horrible. That you can make a guitar or any instrument. I feel for all the parents who have children in band, I feel for you all, because I know my dad went through so much learning, listening to me learn to play. And so God bless you all. But by them, I think by a child, even by learning to play the instrument, we're talking about self-confidence. That's also something, you know. And it keeps the kid busy in today's time, you know. If you can keep them busy in things like that are good for them, like if a girl wants to do a pageant, she's going to rap. How many hours, you and I both know, go into one pageant? Just the walk, learning the walk, all these different things. If you keep a child busy with something that, and don't give them idle time, then they get in so much less trouble. I mean, I've seen it time and time again. If a mother or a father are busy and they don't, you know, they think they're you know, can't get the kid to this practice or that practice or whatever, so, you know, they can just stay at home or whatever. And when that kid gets to be a little older, that kid gets in trouble. Now they can't understand why that kid's in trouble. And, you know, if your child wants to be involved in music or pageantry, sports, anything like that, today's time, I think, is a great thing. Because they're beginning to become the person that they're going to be forever. I mean, once we get to a certain point, you know, our personalities are there forever. It's not going to change. And so I would just, you know, I would like to see parents, you know, to back their children as much as they can. I know Daddy backed me, and I know the first time I sang at the Grand Ole Opry, the first thing that I did when I found out that I had got the gig was I booked my daddy a first class ticket. I couldn't afford that no more than I could afford nothing. But there wasn't no way I was going to have him come out first class. And he had a fit when he found out, you know, at the airport that it was a first class ticket. But anyway, he couldn't do nothing about it by that time, could he? So, and he had a front row seat, plus he had backstage passes. So he was on stage for part of my performances, and he was back in the front row for other parts over the years.
Well, you know, pageantry is a whole different subject that we can talk about for about 10 hours.
No doubt.
And one of, you know, a lot of our shows are going to focus in on the positives of pageant competition and exactly how it does encourage young teens and women to become.
Well, I know it made my life.
Yeah.
Had that judge, when I won Miss Florida, had he not come and knocked on my door and said, I am a talent scout and da-da-da-da-da, where I ended up within days signing with this independent label, and landed on, believe it or not, I landed in Nashville and had to have dinner at Shoney's for my Thanksgiving dinner. At Shoney's, I ate Thanksgiving dinner. Because everything, I mean, we couldn't afford those nice, you know, places to eat. So we ate at Shoney's, and that we landed, like I said, the first time we, because when we got, after we signed the Indy deal, you know, we had to go out and record the music. And Daddy and I went together, and we stayed together at the hotel and walked across the street to Shoney's on Music Valley Drive. Sure did.
And great memories.
Yeah, it was, you know, a great memory of an awful dinner. We
great
had good conversations, and we were just thrilled to be in Guitar Town.
Now, you're going to be hosting the 2009 award-winning.
Oh, I can't wait.
Miss and Mrs. U.S. Beauty's National Pageant. Which,
and I am so excited.
We are very excited to have you host, and you've hosted events before.
Oh, yeah, I've hosted events before, but this one I'm really excited about.
Yeah, this is a little different than what you've hosted
before,
but you just made full circle from Miss Florida to hosting. But, you know, it's going to be totally different for you as a host.
I
than
know.
It would be competing. So you're going to actually see behind the scenes of what it takes to be a pageant competitor.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually see the... That's like when Marty lets me go backstage and, or back, listen to me backstage. When Marty lets me go back into the back of the studio, and the soundboards are huge where you're recording, and you're like, I mean, how do they know what all those buttons do? I mean, it just blows my mind how, you know, how they do this, these soundboards. And so that's the behind the heat bus. That's all of us. That's the behind the scenes of producing, and now I'm going to be able to view that, you know, the pageantry from a whole different point of view from behind the scenes and see how it's really done. And I'm very, very excited about that.
And it's going to be a nice production. Salute to Hollywood, with women coming in from all over the United States to compete for the national title, which is a big deal in the pageant world to be able
to carry a
national title.
Oh, it is. And the crowns are absolutely gorgeous. The sashes are to die for.
And you're also
Lady Di does not do anything halfway. Let's put it that way. I've learned
I'm
that
sure
much.
There's some that are going to disagree, but we'll just leave it at that. You know, you know what? I learned from my mistakes. You know, and I've made them along the way.
Haven't we all, though, Donna?
But you know, we used to have the type of pageant system where it was choreographed pageant production event, and it was a little bit more where you needed a larger staff, you needed people that knew dance choreography, and you know, when you don't have that, and you're trying to put on.
Let's tell a little bit about you now.
Well, we don't want to turn the tables on me.
Yeah, I'm gonna turn it on you.
No, but let me finish.
I always
really.
Said I was if I got on Oprah, I was gonna turn the thing on her. Now I'm gonna turn it on you. Tell them about you and your dance.
Well, you know, I've always wanted to be a theatrical dancer.
Always wanted to be.
You know, and I came from a family where they were old-fashioned Italian, and everything was a phase you were going through. So I think when I got older and I started the pageant system, I really wanted, you know, you can't invent the wheel sometimes. You just cannot invent the wheel, and I wanted to invent the wheel and make it a choreographed pageant production event. But I didn't realize that it took a huge staff, you know, to keep things rolling.
Oh, my gosh. She had, I mean... All these, it was just the Miss USA and the Miss America pageants.
Well, not,
I mean,
quite that. Not quite that.
On a smaller scale, it was.
You know.
Had them all dressed the same. They were dancing the same number, everything.
It's hard to teach contestants who don't have dancing skills to learn how to dance.
I don't know how you do it.
Some people can pick up very easily and others can't. And so we're trying to put a production together. And you could see the girls that were talented and the gals that were not. I mean,
right.
I'm not a talented singer like you. I mean,
And what have I told you? I do not dance.
Well, my husband played a trick on her that she was going to, you know,
Dennis will be doing the worm at the pageant. I'm going to make that announcement a year ahead of time.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Dennis has got a surprise for everybody at the pageant, and he and I, I'll be making the announcement at the pageant that Dennis will be doing something very special for all those beautiful women.
But getting back to pageantry and what we're going to do, we've decided that we're going to have a more elegant and sophisticated pageant. And go back to the glitz and glam of the pageantry and what most girls want to compete in.
Old Hollywood. I loved the theme.
Yeah, and it's going to be professionally done, very nicely done. And I think the gals that will be competing next year will have a wonderful time. And as a host, you're going to gain insight on the girls because you're going to be doing a documentary with them.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm so excited about this.
Be able to see firsthand, you know, how the girls react to you. And you'll see girls that need to be encouraged more and girls that don't, you know. But our goal is to help build self-esteem because I'll tell you, we have seen many of our girls go on to become very successful in their lives in part by being with us. I'm not saying in wholly part. I mean, it's not in whole.
Absolutely.
You know, and pageantry is very important to a lot of women, and if done right, it could be a very very good thing for them. But getting back to you as far as pageantry and hosting it, how do you feel about this? I mean, is it something that...
Excited as can be. My friends are teasing me because they're in love with Toby Keith and, let's see, I've got one in love with Toby Keith and I've got one that's just nuts over Clay Walker. Excuse me. And so they're like, you know, all excited over this tour things. And see, I've been touring. I did it for so many years that, you know, the thing that I'm excited about is the pageant. And I'm thinking, gosh, I wish it wasn't a year away. I'm wanting so bad to get back into that and feel the old feelings that I used to feel at the pageantry of the pageant. I'm so excited about. You make friends for life and you meet people from all walks of life. And I look forward to sharing my story with the girls that had it not been for that independent label, I would have never seen RCA. Let's put it that way. You know, never, ever would I have ever seen RCA.
Now, for our listeners who don't know the difference between independent and, you know, major labels such as RCA, could you explain a little bit about that?
Okay. An independent label is a record label, a company who is very small, some are larger than others, but they're known as indies, an indie label. And an indie label versus a major label is this, money. Okay, a major label can put millions of dollars into the production and have to put millions of dollars into the production of one person. Because you're talking, you know, when you figure up the photography, the videos, the buses, the band members, the trucks, the semi drivers, all the guys who have to put the trusses up and tear it down every night of our stage, and our now we've got, you know, to where we've got these big huge screens so that everybody can see you close up, you know. Back when I was going to see concerts, you know, if you didn't have binoculars, you didn't see nothing but a speck, you know. And now, at least with those big video screens, you can see them up close, and that's wonderful. But they have, these things cost a lot of money, and sound engineers, and then the cost of actual recording, the recording time of the players, of the musicians. Their time, I mean, we're talking, you're talking millions of dollars for one act, okay, and that'd be to produce one album, and hopefully you get more than one hit off that album, or they're going to lose money. So the difference is that indie label cannot put millions of dollars in you because they don't have millions of dollars themselves to do it with, but they can give you much-needed experience. They can put you in a studio where you have never been before. With me, I'd never been in a studio, ever, until after I had won the Miss Florida pageant. And then they put the independent label put me in the studio. I believe it was the name of the studio that we recorded in Nashville was called Reflections Studio, and my producer was Jack Gale, who used to own radio stations and then got into producing, you know, records and got himself and bought an independent label. And so that's, it was Playback Records and / Ridgeway Records. So they were both affiliated with Capitol Records. At the time, Jimmy Bowen was the head of Capitol. Anyway, the indie labels aren't bad because they give you your experience that you need, but they're not going to make you a star. So if any indie label tells you that they can make you a star, and if you just pay them a little bit of money, they can really make you a star. Just shut the door and, you know, walk out. Because I've seen so many people lose so much. And Porter was so good and so... that's a hard thing to do, is to tell someone that you don't have the what it takes to make it. Package. And that's a hard thing to do, you know? And Porter was not a mean man, so it was a very hard thing, I'm sure, for him to do. But he would, I had heard him several times tell people they had sold everything that they had and moved to Nashville with dreams of being a star, because somebody back home had told them they could sing. Well, if you watch American Idol, the beginnings of American Idol, you'll see and you'll think, who in the world told that person they could sing? Somebody told them they could. And it blows your mind. But,
you know, a lot of people feel they have the talent, though.
Yeah, they'll fight for it. They'll fight you over it. Yeah.
They really feel it in their heart.
Absolutely.
But they could sing. And, you know, I feel so bad for them because, you know, somebody else may not think they're a singer because they probably are not singers. But they believe they are.
Oh, they believe it with everything in them.
Yeah, so they'll get out there and they'll go out there and do the best they can, feeling that they can succeed at this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And not everybody was born with the talent to sing. I mean, I tried.
Well, Porter Wagner said to me one time, if it was easy, everybody would be a star.
Yeah, that's true.
And it ain't easy.
But everybody does have talent. They just
Everybody has a talent. God gave, I believe that, 110%.
You know, we just have to find it within ourselves to find the talent.
Just locate what it is that you're good at. And then you take it as far as you can.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you've got a lot of things coming up. You have your autobiography. You have your, you know, your USO tour coming up, too, with Toby Keith. I don't think we even spoke about that.
I'm very excited about the USO tour.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Now, that the USO tours are the most fun of any tours you can go ever have a chance to play. You make no money, I'll tell you that, but you make these soldiers so happy. They are